Welcome to the NOLA Drink Show. Join us as we explore the world of drink, food, and culture in New Orleans and beyond. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody. Hey, welcome to the program. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for coming along for this edition of the NOLA Drink Show. Happy to be bringing you this show. It's something we did last year. We are going to be chatting with a couple of the guys, two of the three organizers of the New Orleans Spirits Competition, and they are Matt Sharp, who is the Director of Operations, and Wayne Curtis, who is the head judge and also noted cocktail author, of course, and such. And we talked to those guys last year. We did something kind of interesting. You can find the show on noladrinks.com if you're interested, because we give you a little bit more of the background of the competition and some other aspects of it that we don't really touch on this time around. But what we did last year is we actually taped a little bit before the finals were judged, and that was part of Tales of the Cocktail in July, and that's now a thing. So the finals this year in 2024 will also take place at Tales of the Cocktail this July. But we taped a sort of a preliminary segment, kind of giving people a background of what the competition is all about and how it works. And then we reconvened after the finals were judged while we were at Tales of the Cocktail and kind of sifted through some of the results and talked about a few other things. So what we're doing this time a little bit differently is we're bringing you that kind of first leg, if you will, a little bit earlier. And we were talking, as I mentioned, to Wayne and Matt, and we let you know a little bit more about what the competition is and how it works, especially if you didn't catch the show last time around. And then excitingly, we talk a lot about some of the great changes that they've made, and really most of those are just growing, getting bigger, more categories. They're going to be doing more of the public aspect of this when the finals take place. We'll describe how that happens during the interview. But if you're going to Tales of the Cocktail, it's a great way to sit in with professional judges and see how spirits are evaluated at that level. And they're just expanding that too. Last year it was 4 sessions. This year it's going to be 8. And we just give you a whole host of other information. We talk about some emerging trends and some things like that in the spirits industry, some things that Wayne and Matt are excited to see as these changes take place, both in the market and with the competition itself. So a lot of fun chatting with those guys. I know we're going to be convening with our friends from Tales of the Cocktail in the very near future, talking about some policy things that they're doing. We know what Tales of the Cocktail is all about, especially if you listen to the show regularly or you've been. It's all about advocating for the drinks business and those in it. And so they're undertaking some policy initiatives to address certain things in the industry, and some exciting stuff that they got coming down the pike also. So be excited to talk to them. We'll be bringing you that show fairly soon. I've got some other things in the works, friends. So just be on the lookout for new programs. I will flag this to your attention. We'll say this during the interview, and I'll say this again when I close out. But if you are a spirits producer interested in submitting your stuff to the New Orleans Spirits Competition, the deadline is April 26th. So it's coming pretty quick. You can go check out their website. We run that down for you, but go check it out and get yourself involved. Get yourself judged. There you go. Hopefully you win. Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show, and I'm going to be back chatting with Wayne and Matt from the New Orleans Spirits Competition. Come on back. All right, everybody, welcome back to the program. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for joining us on the NOLA Drink Show. Friends, happy to have you here and happy to be bringing you this show. As you know, pleased to welcome back my friends from the New Orleans Spirits Competition, two of the three of the triumvirate of greatness that puts on the New Orleans Spirits Competition, Wayne Curtis and Matt Sharp. Wayne, how are you?
Doing great. How about yourself?
Doing really well. Good to see you. Good to see you. I know we're spitting distance from each other, but I'm looking at you on a screen right now.
Right.
And Matt, how are you, man?
Doing great. How are you doing?
All right, man. How's life out there in Oregon?
Oh, it's the weather's perfect. It's flirting with like maybe mid-60s today. It actually feels like spring.
Yeah, congratulations. I wish I was there.
Thank you.
Well, great, you guys. Well, thanks for joining me again. We did something interesting last year, which I can't remember ever in the history of this program doing something exactly this way, where we taped a segment kind of teeing up the New Orleans Spirits Competition before the final judging, which took place, of course, at Tales of the Cocktail in July, and then we reconvened after the judging was complete to kind of put a bow on things. This time, I guess we're getting a little bit of a head start here, talking about the competition a little bit earlier as we move towards the 2024 your event. I guess what I'll ask you to do, Wayne, and maybe I'll start with you here then, is a lot of people probably heard the show last time around, but can you give us just a nutshell version of what the competition is and just a brief history?
Sure. This is our third year of the competition. We launched in 2022. We had 2023. This will be third year, 2024. We are a spirit competition open to anyone who makes distilled spirits, anyone around the world. These could be craft producers. They could be legacy producers that have been making whiskey for 150 years. People can send us their bottles. We bring in a really top-notch crew of judges that will then assess each of the spirits individually, and they will rate them. And we will take the top six in each category, and we bring them to New Orleans for Tales of the Cocktail, and we do a live blind tasting with another set of judges and in front of an audience that can see how the actual process goes. So open to any makers of distilled spirits. We offer, we then determine gin of the year, whiskey of the year, rum of the year, as well as distillery of the year through all that vetting and voting. Mm-hmm.
So, Matt, let me ask you this question. What was kind of the impetus for starting this competition? I don't think I actually ever asked you guys that before. What, you know, was there a need that you saw? Was there, so what was the why, I guess, is my question.
Well, we noticed that there was a lack of a connection between craft spirits, legacy brand spirits, and bartenders. There's always those direct channels where someone can go out and they can sample out an individual bar team or a bar program with spirits and such. But there was never like a direct pipeline between smaller brands and legacy brands also at the same time competing and getting into the hands and mouths of bartenders. And Tales of the Cocktail is the perfect place for that. So between 20 and 30,000 bartenders every single year, it's just this massive festival for that. So to be able to bring the top six of the specific category and the potential to duke it out to see who's doing what with all these people who really are experts, who truly know what it is that they're tasting, or at the very, very least, passionate, enthusiastic about it, was just a really great opportunity.
Yeah, okay. That sounds great. Let me ask you guys this question before, because I do want to ask you kind of how things went down last year and some of the cool parts about it and stuff like that. But Matt, I'll kick this right back to you again. So, and I know, Wayne, you touched on this just a second ago, but how does this work exactly? So people can submit, you have some submission guidelines, on the website. And then, but tell us how like the judging works and how do people actually advance to this final round here in New Orleans in July?
Well, we start out with, initially, everything is set up into classes and categories. So like whiskey, brandy, gin, rum, those types of things. And then we put all the apples with apples to a certain degree in a way that just makes it so that it's allowed to be judged with like against like. But the truth of the matter is that the merits of the spirits are judged against their own qualities and their own value out there. And so we get these two judges. And the judges will evaluate, and they'll be able to go through the process of seeing this is the taste, this is how the odors interact on the play, on the palate. This is how the finish works, and like the coloring, is there any flaws? Are there any things that need to be worked on? And they will grade, and they will evaluate, and they will actually provide notes to see exactly, like this is a thing that is something that I've seen in the past that can be fixed. Oh, there's some flock particulates coming out. Oh, it was stored cold or wrong temperature, stuff blah, blah, such as that. And then they're graded. They are judged with a numeric score that is applied to them. And then at the end, we go through empirically and we select those things out that have the sixth highest scores. And we go from there. So it's basically as a blind judging. They don't know what it is that they're tasting. They don't know what they're going to get. It makes it so that you can have all of the Irish whiskeys against the Irish whiskeys. You can have all the bourbons against the bourbons. You can have all of the very, very esoteric mezcals against the very other esoteric mezcals. Right. And the only information they're going to get is what the commodity base is going to be. Is there a specific varietal that they need to know about or a specific style? And then it's allowed to just shine on its own merits.
It's
really a two-part or a hybrid type of competition. The first one is, as Matt mentioned, everyone's tasted independently. So the score is from 0 to 100 on each one on those different levels, on its clarity, on its aroma, on its entry, on the finish, and just the overall palate of how it affects you. So that's everything's judged independently. The second round is more competitive, our competition round. As Matt mentioned, the top six that get the top six scores in each of the main categories then go on to the live competition. And there we have the judges will assess a flight of six in front of them, and they'll rank them from one to six. And then we tally up the results, and that's how we determine the rum of the year and the gin of the year, et cetera.
So just so we're clear, so the judges are aware of the category, right, that they're judging, and then that's about it in general.
They know the category. They know the proof. As Matt said, they know substrate, if it's essential. We'll let them know, it doesn't say just whiskey. We'll let them know if it's a single malt or whether it is a bourbon or whether a rye or whether just an American whiskey, which could be pretty much anything. Mm-hmm. So it's they get general information so that they know what they're doing. And so what, the thing about judging is that you're not judging, oh, this is my favorite, this is my least favorite. It's you're judging, this is technically well done, this is well balanced, this is well created. And it really helps to know what that general category is, particularly with liqueurs. If somebody's doing a strawberry liqueur, you want them to know, the judges to know it's supposed to be strawberry, because some of the liqueurs might be a little bit off base and you think, oh, this might be raspberry. But knowing that it's strawberry, you think, it's not really hitting strawberry. So you want to judge it based on what their goal is, what they're trying to achieve.
Got it. You raise a really good point, Wayne. I have this conversation a lot with people, doing that. I do a fair bit of cocktail competition judging myself. And it's imperative. Your job is not to your preference, right? It's if something is well made, it's done correctly. Obviously, in the case of cocktails, if it shows balance, so on and so forth. And I think that's a hard time. Sometimes people have a hard time understanding that, because people, if you're asking me what I like the best is not necessarily what I scored the best. And those are two very different things. And I think it's important to make that distinction. And that's why the judges that you get are professionals that know how to make that separation.
Right. We give that talk to all the judges before the initial judging. Don't tell us what your favorite is. Tell us what you think is the best made based on your experience. And we get judges from a variety of backgrounds so that they come at it from different angles. We have distillers, we have writers, we have bartenders, we have distributors, people that have been working with liquor from all different angles. And so everybody, I think it's sort of a form of triangulation to find out this one. If we get one that everybody agrees on, we know that's close to a perfectly made spirit.
Right.
So it is that we do a very thorough job in checking our judges to make sure that they're going to come to this with that sensibility, that one that they're not so much judges. Judges tend to, you think of judges either thumbs up or thumbs down. This is more evaluators and analysts when they go over the product to let us know, this has got a really great aroma, but it comes up a little bit flabby on the palate. Finish disappears too quickly. We want folks that have some experience in being able to come up with this sort of assessments and rate it accordingly.
Got it. So Matt, from here, then we have this first round and then we move to New Orleans, and we've talked about this a little bit, but I think what was really cool this past year, in 23 that y'all did. So we get the top six in each category, and then how does it go down? How did it go down this year? And then what tell us how it works. I mean, I was part of it as an audience member, but I think it's a really cool thing that y'all do. Put some pressure on those final judges, don't you?
Yeah, these are people out there who are now suddenly doing it for a live studio audience. We get a panel of judges. We get four of them. We put them up in the front, and they are doing their final deliberations as to what they like, what they don't like about the spirits getting into, like, that are put in front of them. And these are the ones that were judged initially through the first round in a heat as the best empirically, and like they're judged on their own merits. But these are the ones that when it was determined that they were sort of like the acme of what this individual spirit type is. And so we have an audience who gets to observe this, and like a little bit of it is watching someone sit up there very quietly making faces as they're smelling glasses. But when the discussion actually starts, it turns into a bit of a roundtable. They get to express why it is that they like the thing that they like. They get to go through and explain the notes. The audience gets to also like ride along for this. They get to see exactly what it was like. They get to have their own evaluations and such. Their evaluations don't have any input into the final scoring on the bottles that make their way to the top six. but they get to see, they get to learn, they get to experience, they get to actually get that chance to taste and see how, what these other people who are experts with decades of time tasting things, see what it is that they're tasting, how does it taste. Mm-hmm. And then like a typically a beautiful roundtable sort of develops between those, the panel at the very top, and they get to see what it's like actually in the judging room.
Right.
Like the witty quips, the chance to actually like see, like, I like this, or I didn't like this because of this, and actually the back and forth that comes, the negotiation process.
We'll add that there's not many, if any, competitions that do this public judging, this doing it out in the open like this. I think probably for a good reason, that tend to be, judges might not be quite as forthcoming if they know that they're, the results are going to be revealed right then and there. Some judge might, you know, really love a product, and then it turns out it's something that they've, in the past, that they've been critical of, and they don't have to backpedal or do the remarks. So we're, one of the concerns that we had was that we didn't know how forthcoming the judges were going to be in front of the public, not knowing what it was that they were tasting and commenting on. There's a comment I got from Dale DeGroff, who was one of our judges last year and will be again a judge this year, is that he thought it was real smart because it forced the judges, you know, we give, every judge has 1 minute on the stage to discuss each of the six samples that they tasted, and whether what the advantages were, what the disadvantages were, where they thought it was the strongest, where they thought it was the weakest. And he said that, you know, by putting people in front of an audience, you're much more, you're required to be much more sharp and much more analytical than you might normally be. So it turned out, it worked out well. Judges did not seem to hold back last year. They were willing to put all their thoughts out there and then let the marbles fall where they may once we opened the boxes up and we could see which each of the samples were that they were tasting. Mm.
You know, one thing that I like that you guys did, I think, is also somewhat unique, say, as opposed to like a guided tasting or something along those lines. And, you know, the judges are up there judging, but then the audience was asked to be asked to evaluate the spirits at the same time, right? So it wasn't like I'm sitting there listening to what the judges have to say and then have that influence what I was writing down. We were all asked simultaneously, audience and judges alike, to do their evaluation. And I thought that part was really cool because then you could kind of benchmark versus other people and versus the judges of what you tasted. And I remember, and I was telling you this, Wayne, I think after the event during Tales, the woman who was sitting next to me was very nice, but she kept talking to me during the whole thing about what she was tasting. And I'm like, I think you're missing the spirit of this. I want to do this like independently and not have you talk to me. But I think that's a really cool part. And I think that really enhances the sort of interactivity of the whole thing and just, you know, just the whole experience for the audience members.
Right. And as Matt said, the audience scores don't figure into the final tabulation of the best spirits of the year.
Right.
But it's great. It's really informative. I mean, well, how we do it is that each of the judges turn in their scores. And while those are being tabulated up, we do ask the audience for a raise of hands, whose favorite was number one, whose favorite was number two. And then we tabulate that up and see, okay, the audience favorite was number four. And then we reveal the judges' scores. And it's fascinating to see where there's correlation and where there's not. I think last year, the one that sticks in mind is the rum category, where all four judges plus the audience all selected the same rum as a favorite. Others, there's a little bit more discrepancy. You might have a gap of one or two. But it's that, to me, is also really informative and interesting.
Yeah, you know, I was in the gin session. I think I told you guys the reason why I went to that one of the four sessions, it was four, right, that y'all did. That's probably my weakest category, so that's why I wanted to come to that one to learn. And, you know, there was some disparity between the audience and the judges, but there was, you know, it was close. I mean, most of the ones that were towards the top and things like that, and it didn't seem to be too off.
So what did you learn about gin? How did that work?
Yeah, it worked. It worked really great. I mean, it's a great question. I mean, I have some experience with the category, but just, you know, kind of a broad-based analysis of what some of the tasting notes, you know, the notes, the flavor notes themselves that people were getting were not ones that I would necessarily associate with the spirit and wouldn't have been able to sort of just pull it out myself. Like with whiskey, I do a lot of stuff with that. And agave and rum, I'm pretty comfortable working through those categories, and certainly wine more so than anything else. But yeah, it was just, I'm just not as well-versed and haven't tasted as much of the world of gin And so just the subtle variations of the botanicals and the difference that they made was really interesting to me.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah. So
let me, what I was supposed to do. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great. It was fantastic. I came away definitely learning quite a bit of stuff. Let me ask you guys this question before we take our first break, because we'll get into some stuff about trends and what's new for this year on the other side of the break. But one of the things that I think is really interesting, we were talking about the categories that you guys have, and then there's a line here. I'm looking at the submission guidelines as we speak. The NOLA Spirits Competition reserves the right to reclassify as staff considers appropriate. And I think we touched on this a little bit last time around, you guys, that, you know, it's an ever evolving landscape. Things trend in different directions. So you guys, I think that statement is designed that, like, if you get an influx of something or an emerging category emerges, that's allows you the flexibility to create that category or subdivide a category. Is that correct?
Yes,
basically. Matt's just a
good one, Matt.
Matt is in the back room and dividing and subdividing and working with a team of stewards to make sure everything gets in the right category. So this is really his ballywick.
So what we're finding in the back is that, like, as you said, it's constantly evolving. There's always like trends that roll through, and then all of a sudden there's an influx of a very, very specific type. Like you notice it much more readily with beer more than anything else. Right. Like, you know, what's the flavor of the season? Well, 2 years ago it was a cold IPA, then it's going to be a light IPA, like, you know, and then it's lagers. For spirits, it takes a little bit longer because the investment is so much greater, and because a lot of these things take between, you know, 4 and 10 years to get into a barrel. So the decisions that are made maybe 6 years ago, 8 years ago, are like finally making themselves apparent in bottles for us now. And so what's happening is that we're finding out the trends that people were perceiving as they were anywhere between 2 and 8 years ago do create influxes. They do create like tidal swells of very specific types of specialty spirits. And, like, you know, gin is also very easy that way. There are moves towards tradition. And so there's larger categories that are going into place for what would be typically like a London Dry, which is a straight juniper based and like influenced spirit. But then there's subtle nuances here and there, elements of terroir, elements of where the water sourcing is coming from. So it becomes like very, very apparent that it's hard to judge some of these things as apples to apples from one thing from one place versus something from a different location, just because of those subtle variations. And then, like, so it becomes more, it becomes incumbent on us to, in the back room especially, to go through and try to see how are these things going to be judged the most fairly.
Okay.
Like, so back to gin, we wouldn't put a single botanical lotus blossom gin with a very, very traditional London Dry style that happens to come from New England. There's no way that those things are going to be judged fairly against each other. One's going to dominate the palate, the other one of which is going to be too delicate. So like that kind of thing spawns an additional subcategory that comes from that, where we end to start playing with signature botanicals or single botanicals going into gin, where we need to subdivide maybe massive categories to make them more bite-sized, stuff like that.
That makes sense. And are you kind of making these decisions, Matt, up until the 11th hour, or you guys have a pretty, you are, okay, got it.
Like I go through the moment that judging submissions close, I go through and I start shifting and sorting data to sift to make it possible to make things into bite-sized chunks rather than 500 to 600 individual, just this massive wad, this huge, just bucket full of spirits. And I need to get this information to my stewards so that they can actually do their job. We're hiring experts. I need to make their jobs capable and possible to do. But there will get down to it sometimes, and you never know until you get the bottle open, that there's this one thing that's going to have a really, really heavily an influencing note in the nose that was previously not necessarily there. And so then that we get into like realms of like flighting, like where things need to go in order so that the thing at the very, very end doesn't destroy everything else that comes before. Mm-hmm. Stuff like that.
Gotcha. Cool, you guys. I appreciate that. Let's take a little break here and we'll come back. We're going to talk a little bit about what to expect in 2024. I'll probably tap into these guys and we'll continue on that conversation about trends and some other things, friends, connected to the New Orleans Spirits Competition. Come on back. We'll be right back. All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for joining me, friends, on the program. Happy to be joined by Wayne Curtis and Matthew Sharp from the New Orleans Spirits competition. Shout out to Drew Faulkner. Drew must have fallen off the planet somewhere, right? I don't know, but we'll get him around next time.
It was the eclipse. The eclipse got him.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I was gonna say this to you guys too, and I'm not gonna name the event specifically, and Drew's not here, but the last time I saw the three of you guys together, you guys were running in late to a specific event, hurrying to get there, and my wife and I were sneaking out early to avoid staying for the rest of said event. And we were sort of like passing like ships in the night. You guys were racing up the escalator, and we were stealing away into the streets of New Orleans. And I'm just going to leave it there. Anyway, I don't want to say what event it is publicly because I don't want to get any of us in trouble. But yeah, so you guys, 2024, it's exciting. You mentioned that it's the third year, Wayne, coming up here. In sort of a broad stroke sense, maybe not a market trend sense, what are some new things to look for? What should we be expecting? What's looking different?
The event itself, or certainly the public side, we've got an expansion in the tasting rooms with the championship judging at the end. Last year was the first time we'd done it. We did four categories because we weren't sure what kind of response we were going to have for this, either from judges or from the audience. It turned out it was great demand. We had huge lines, particularly for whiskey. Everybody wanted to get into the whiskey tasting. We only could seat 25 last year. We had a smaller room. Line went down the hallway. We ended up turning away probably 2/3 of the people that wanted to come in. So this year we're expanding. We're expanding not only in the size of the room. We're going to be able to accommodate 50 this year tasting alongside the judges. And we're also doubling the number of categories that we did this year. Oh, wow. Last year we had four. This year we're going to do 8 categories. We'll be doing them over 2 days. It'll be the Monday and Tuesday of Tales of the Cocktail, the first 2 days of the event. And we'll have a room upstairs at the Ritz-Carlton where we're just basically for our judging to take place. So we're doubling up the number of categories. And another big change we're doing is because of the demand in whiskey, we've split the whiskey category. Instead of just doing whiskey of the year, we're going to have American whiskey of the year and also a world whiskey of the year.
Oh, cool.
So we're splitting up the categories so that all the bourbons and ryes and other American whiskeys, the single malts, will be in one category judged, and then the others will be judged Canadian, Irish, Scotch, Japanese, Indian whiskeys. All the others will be judged in a separate category.
Okay.
For that.
Wayne, let me ask you a question real quick. So tell us the four sessions that you did with the audience last year, and then what are the four new ones going to be?
Last year was gin, brandy, rum, and whiskey. This year we're adding vodka, liqueurs. We have the world whiskey that's being added in. And then the other, we've discussed, I don't have it right in front of me.
That's all right. Yeah. Do you know Matt off the top of your head?
We're doing a whiskey agave, cane.
Agave was the one I missed. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Liqueurs. I believe we're also doing, this is not our day.
That sounds like 8 to me.
Between those guys, it was the agave.
So that's really cool. I'm glad to see that footprint expand. Go ahead and carry on, Wayne. Were you going to add some other new stuff about 24?
Those are our main changes. The adding in the world whiskey into the competition, and also adding an additional categories to be judged publicly. So we'll have a total of, since we're doing 8 sessions, we'll have 4 judges per each. So it's 32 judges we'll be having up there, and we can accommodate now, 50 times 8? So we can be able to get 400 people in for tastings over the course of the 2 days. So we're excited about that.
That's really exciting. Can I ask you guys this question? Because I'm looking at the types of spirits and the categories that you have listed at the moment. One of them, which I find fascinating, is baijiu with a soju and shochu. Was that was that a category last year, or is that new?
It was not. We did not have enough entrants come in last year for that. We're hoping to encourage more this year. I think we had maybe a half dozen or so enter last year, which isn't enough to make it into a legit competition for the top 6.
Got it.
So this year we're hoping for more. But no, it's a fascinating category. We're really hoping to see that continue to expand.
Yeah, I'm really intrigued. It's been one of my favorite categories in recent years, and spent a lot of time around shochu now that more and more is on the market. So I'm glad to see that that's being addressed. Matt, what do you want to add, man? That's as far as new stuff for 24. Anything come to mind?
For me, the biggest expansion and the most excitement is actually going to be the low and no.
Yeah.
Things that have, you know, that are out there as alternatives to heavy spirits and cocktails. It's the one of the biggest trends that's happening. But the variation and the explosion of different styles, different types, the creativity that has to go into what are you doing to replace the gravitas of alcohol itself, of ethanol in the spirit. So many different solutions, from monk fruit additions to other things that add weight and lees aging in barrels that already have other things going on to it. A couple of people are doing capsaicin just to make it kind of spicy. But what I'm also seeing is that the increase of the base commodities are going, they're going up exponentially, like, because it's actually becoming a competitive product. So it's not just people just putting stuff in bottles and saying, like, this is an alternative to gin. Because I put juniper and lemon peel and such into some water and shook it around a lot. And people are actually going into and making really, really well-crafted elixirs. A lot of thoughts going into these things. And a lot of them are only available on a regional basis. It's not just something that is a nationally dominated product base. So it's really becoming almost artisanal in very specific parts of the country. And like the expansion that we're seeing in that is really cool.
Do you think, and I mean, is it something, I'll use kind of a crude analogy, I always sort of tease when people are talking about something that's like fake bacon, right? And it might, the product itself might taste very good and it's totally fine. Just don't tell me it's bacon, because it's not bacon. And so, it's great. It's an alternative to bacon. It tastes fine. It goes great on a salad, goes great on a sandwich, whatever we're talking about here, but it's still not bacon. Are we finding that some of these non-alcoholic elixirs are they starting to kind of, I think you said this, but develop their own identity where they're not trying to be something else that they're not, they're just trying to be a quality product and then standing on their own two feet independently.
Exactly. Like some of them, like initially at the right out the gate, they started having things like, this is a tequila substitute, this is a gin substitute, right, this is a bourbon substitute. Nowadays, you're starting to see that they're just identifying themselves by, this is number seven. Okay, well, what is number seven? Well, number seven's smoky. Number seven has a little bit more richness on the back end, but number seven, we added a specific type of gooseberry that you can only get, blah, 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 blah. Like, okay, that's cool. What's it supposed to do? Well, you're supposed to put it with some soda water, and you're supposed to try to sip it and see if it's any good. If you like it, then cool, you're drinking something that's cool. Like, okay, that's fantastic. They're finding ways, though, to add that sort of like specific, just that dignity to it, which is really, really cool. They do stand on their own. Some of them are also becoming like viable substitutes. I was at an industry event about a month ago, and I actually had some people not realize that they weren't drinking gin.
Wow. Interesting.
Like, that was kind of surprising, but like no one knew that the place was licensed for alcohol. Well, that was their solution, was they found a way to have something that was low. No, that was a viable like juniper substitute that actually had like really, really good extraction. It de-alcoholized down to less than 0.5%. So it was legal to do in the Northwest. And it became like one of the little hits of the show, is that you had this gimlet that was not really like a gin product. Well, it was gin at one point in time, the infusion, blah, 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 but it worked and it worked well.
That's really interesting. It's really interesting. So thank you for elaborating on that. Wayne, another one for you then that I think some people might be maybe, and I'll use the word surprised to see as a category, are the ready to drink or pre-made cocktails. And that was kind of a hit last year too, wasn't it?
It was. We got quite a few entries of those last year. It's taken off. I think you see that when you see the news from the industry, it's beer is dropping off. And I think a lot of that's being picked up by the ready to drink cocktails. That is, this is not necessarily a bartender favorite, because it's sort of replacing what they do behind the stick to make their own. But it's for consumers, the canned cocktails are great. You can put them into, you know, the trunk of their car, take them for tailgating, take them for picnics and sporting events and wherever else, and just pop them open. And some of the quality of that, just with the no and low, has really been increasing. It's interesting to see the comments on the ready-to-drink category, just because of the I think a lot of the comments that I've seen on our sheets have been like, this tastes very natural. This tastes like it was made with real fruit. So many of the early ones just were sort of artificially flavored and had that juicy fruit, one note, one pop kind of flavor to them. But the ones we're seeing now are much more natural. It tastes like, oh, somebody took the time to infuse mint in here. There's some real lemon peel that went into this. It isn't just from a flavoring house off the New Jersey Turnpike to create that. So that's been a nice switch in evolution. The other ones that's also been fascinating to me is vodka. And I think it's because of the change in the TTB ruling a couple of years ago that vodka is defined as being something flavorless, tasteless, odorless, and colorless. Still colorless, you know, it's now defined by the production technique rather than by the end result. But people are leaning into, distillers are leaning into making vodka that has more mouthfeel or a little bit of character depending on the substrate. And so that's become a much more interesting category to judge. So it's always, vodka's always been problematic for judges. You give the judges the instructions, say, here, vote on these. Which is the most flavorless, characterless, tasteless, and odorless product? Is that your criteria? And it was always a dance to try to figure out how to judge vodka. But now with that off the table, you can really judge it on something that has got more character in it. So that's been a really fun category to watch. And we'll be doing the vodka championship round this year. So I think that should be interesting as well.
You know, Wayne, I appreciate you saying, hold that thought, Matt, real quick. I appreciate you saying that about vodka because I've raised the ire of people over time. If you're telling me it's supposed to be tasteless, odorless, and colorless, how many do we need on the market? Right? I mean, do we need 10, 12, 15? I would rather taste vodka. You know, one should do, right? If that's truly what it is, maybe you can argue a little bit. Six, right, is fine. Don't need that many on the back bar. So making something with some character and using different ingredients and things like that, I think is really interesting. And it's an interesting trend to see, and I'm happy about it. Mm-hmm. Matt, sorry, you were saying?
Oh, yeah, no. Like back of the house, we always love vodka. Not because it ends up being a spacer, but at the same point in time, it's that it shows off the quality of the distiller. It's one of those things you have nothing to hide behind.
Right.
There's no flavor adjuncts. There's no barrel aging. There is if you screw up your fermentation, if you mess up or use poor quality commodity bases of products, they're like you use sub-quality grain just to sort of get something out there, you know. If you messed up and your fruit wasn't good, if you're doing a fruit-based vodka, you know, and it's very, very easy. But the way that the expansion is occurring is it still allows that. It allows that variation of like the distiller's art to make something that is just gentle, that doesn't have anything else that needs to be, no artifice mm-hmm. done to it. But at the same time, too, has a terroir or a regionality element or a styling element. Like I can't wait to see what specifically fruit producers who make fruit vodkas in the past, what they're doing with it nowadays. Like, are we going to get apple vodka because it tastes actually sort of like apple skin mm-hmm. or like the flesh of like, you know, a perfect in season pear, just the tiniest hint of it, just to nuance the alcohol behind it. Cause otherwise previously, what was the great line is that it's the water because all the vodka was made by someplace else. The
craft of vodka has always been in the marketing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Handcrafted, handmade.
Yeah, that's changing. Yeah.
that's really cool, you guys. I'm excited to see that too. It's an interesting category for all the reasons that you guys just said, and I think a lot of people maybe are not aware of that and where it's going. Let me ask you guys this because I know Matt, we got to get you out of here pretty quick. Maybe Wayne and both of y'all start with you, Wayne. Aside from some of the ones that we've touched on, what are some of the emergent categories or trends that you think we're going to see moving here into 24, maybe by more submittals or, you know, Matt mentioned the latency of you plan something, you know, 6 years ago to see what happens now. Where do you think we're going to go and where might you be surprised?
One of the things that we're seeing, and I'm hoping we see more of, is American Amaro, the Italian bitter liqueur. Those have been surprisingly great. So quite a few of those have come out, including some non-alcoholic ones, which are really impressive. But seeing the Amaro is great. And that one does not have the 6 to 8 year gestation period. You can do an Amaro in a week with some infusing. And so, and people are, I think, seeing distillers experimenting with more local products to put in there, you know, local herbs and leaves and barks and things to put into their Amaro. And I think that's been exciting. And that's a place that really opens itself for the exploration of terroir, whether it's like the Fernet coming out of North Carolina with Ida Rhine, doing it using a lot of local products, Scott Blackwell with High Wire Distilling down in South Carolina, also doing an Amaro with all South Carolina sourced products. That's been a great category, and I think people are starting to be a little bit, consumers are being a little more open to it now. I think a lot of them got spooked off by it because it can be really aggressive and forceful, but now that as the education expands and people are looking for more challenging tastes, Amaros are being welcomed to the table.
Do you think low ABV plays into that a little bit for those that are towards the lower end of the spectrum?
I think so. I definitely think so. Certainly the no ABV ones, San Agrestis or some of the others are producing really extraordinary Amaros. Occasionally I'll make drinks, substitute that out for something with higher ABV in it just because the taste is great. The taste comes through really well.
Mm-hmm. Matt, what about you?
Just like when I was talking about things that are sourced locally, things that are passion projects, really. Like things that typically would be like someone made this thing for themselves and they made like maybe a barrel or maybe like five cases, something small. Just a non-existent amount of it that they can give as like maybe gifts for Christmas. All of a sudden, like they're listening to the people who are saying like, you should make more of this because all of a sudden the education of the entire market is increasing. The exposure to really cool things is also increasing too. So that when those people say like, yeah, you should do something more, they can actually like legitimately say like, oh, this might be marketable. I should believe this person because they actually kind of know what it is they're talking about a little bit, which is even 5 years ago. Consumers have had a hard time with that. Mm-hmm. So when you start seeing stuff like the Amari that Wayne was talking about, sure, like vermouth in general. When you start finding interesting infusions, you start finding people who are doing really, really cool, like discarded style products. Like this is just something I got lying around, the discarded banana peel from before. Like the prevalence of that came around, that was really, really cool. People playing around with artisanal local products like the Nishta Mall. I mentioned that one before. Like that was really, really fun, the Nishta. So that's what I'm seeing. That's what I really am enthused about is the expansion of things that are truly artisanally done, that are just nano micro scale, that are passion projects. That's like who in their right mind would make this? Well, someone made it and they made it well and they made right. it with gusto.
Very cool. Well, you guys, before we close up shop here, let's start here. Wayne, can you tell people where do people go just to connect with the New Orleans Spirits competition, just to like learn more about it to our audience members?
Best spots are either through our website, which is nolaspiritscomp.com, or through our Instagram feed, which is at nolaspiritscomp. Both of those will get you to let you know what we're up to. If you're interested in coming to a championship round, you can do that through Tales of the Cocktail through their website. When you register for that, it'll give information on how to attend those.
Great.
And as I said, this will be Monday and Tuesday, the first 2 days of Tales in July.
Awesome. And we'll have these links in our show notes. And Matt, if somebody's listening out there that would like to submit, what do they do as a producer?
Go to our website. The submission process is there. It's very prominent. Enter here, numerous different places. Click on it. and just follow the links and prompts. We try to set it up so that it will help you sift your product into exactly the categories that it needs to go. But like, just go there. NolaSpiritsComp.com.
Perfect. Thanks a lot, guys. I look forward to seeing you in July. Tail sounds like I may see you, if not before next month, Wayne. So I really appreciate your time.
Sure thing. Appreciate it. Appreciate Absolutely. Your time.
Yep. Thanks, guys. Friends of Brief
Thanks,
Musical.
Brian, appreciate
yeah. it. Thank you, Matt. I appreciate it. Good to see you. Friends of Brief Musical Interlude, and I'll be back to close things out. All right, everybody. Hey, thanks for listening into the show, friends. Happy to have had you here. Hope you enjoyed the conversation with Wayne and Matt. Always interesting to chat with those guys. They're such a wealth of knowledge as it relates to the drinks business and the world of spirits. I'm sure that we will convene with them after at the very least, after the competition, the finals take place at Tales of the Cocktail. Maybe try and organize something like we did last year, where we get with them right after the awards are announced and presented, and kind of get some immediate reactions and all of that good stuff. But again, we did mention this, of course, during the interview. If you are a spirits producer and you would like to submit your spirits, go to nolaspiritscomp.com. Again, nolaspiritscomp.com. And the instructions and all that stuff, the process, the categories and such are all right there on the website. A couple housekeeping things too, friends, as it relates to this show. We didn't say this explicitly. I think it was kind of implied. And certainly the last time these guys were on, we talked about it. But the New Orleans Spirits Competition is presented by the Tales of the Cocktail Foundation. You probably figured that out, right? Because the finals take place at Tales of the Cocktail. But just wanted to make sure that we mentioned that properly and give them a shout out. And they're also supported by Imbibe and Price Imports, which is a very fine importer of interesting spirits and liqueurs and those sorts of things. Good old Henry Price out there in California. So yeah, friends, I do hope you enjoyed that. And I mentioned that we'll be bringing you a future show that we're working on with Tales of the Cocktail, talking about some of their policy initiatives as it affects the drinks business. Looking forward to bringing you that one. And we got a whole host of other stuff in the works that we're going to be working on for you. So stay alert, stay tuned, and be on the lookout for some new programs here, new episodes of the NOLA Drink Show, friends. But again, thanks for joining me this time around. And hey, remember to be kind to one another, use your turn signal, put your shopping cart up, and when you're supposed to, hit reply all. Until next time, friends, cheers, y'all.